The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another assigned episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Oh.
Well done.
There we go. I'm your host, Tim DLGG. You don't have to do all the dings for that. We can.
Ah, sure. Why not?
And tonight, the man right now behind the sound effects is at News Nerds Need at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Total professional. Total.
At Agent underscore 70 will be with us shortly once he's done eating dinner, aka a burrito. And we also have...
Wrong one. Sorry.
It happens.
Well, you know, people are just so excited. They want to know.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is at PCN underscore dirt.
Yay!
Let me put that up. There we go.
Whoa.
Those watching on the video can see his nice promotion for his Vine comic reviews. Let people know where they can watch your reviews.
Woo! That's exciting. If you don't got the video feed, you're missing out.
Give him that URL.
No. I'm not reading that off. Audio only, people. You got to watch the video. That's it. Done.
Done. And you can go to theclicknation.com to find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Also on the website, you'll find links to our social media accounts on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+. Also, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google+, as Agent 70 is now joining us once he's set up.
What's up, everybody?
Comes in loud and fierce.
The dueling applause there.
We are part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. You can buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise at our Redbubble account. That's at redbubble.com/people/cspn/shop. And we talked about this before the show started, but we never actually came to a consensus, but I believe I'll make a decision that we are going to start tonight's episode with an advanced review of a book out next week.
Ooh.
And that book is Doom Patrol number 1 from...
Where's the sound effect for that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't even know. Like, should we ring the spoiler bell right now, just in case anyone wants to avoid this part of the show?
And there it is. So Doom Patrol is the first book out next week from DC's Young Animal imprint.
I'm still not 100% sure what makes Young Animal not Vertigo.
Right.
The name?
It's branding. Hip. It's hip and cool.
Branding.
Just seems like, well, you know, Doom Patrol fits Vertigo very well. But all right, so did anybody else read this, or am I the only one?
Yeah, wait, there is a sound effect for that one.
Nobody. Wow.
Sorry, dude.
All right. Well, here's the thing with Doom Patrol. If you're at all familiar with Doom Patrol, you know that it's crazy and weird and out there. And generally, every time a new writer comes on, they put their own spin on it. And it's completely different from any version that came before. You may have, you know, same characters and they may know each other in the same relationships. But as far as what the stories are and what they entail, completely different. And so this is, again, kicking it off. I've heard a lot of people say that it feels like there's elements from the different incarnations, but to be honest, I've only read maybe two different versions of Doom Patrol, one of them being the version from the 60s and one being a version from the early 90s, mid-90s. So I'm not up on everything Doom Patrol that's come out over the years, but to say that it is weird is a bit of an understatement. For instance, the burrito that's on the cover is in the book, and the burrito explodes, and one of the characters from Doom Patrol comes flying out of it as it explodes because he's apparently been hiding in some microscopic world within the burrito that he's been trying to escape. But no, it's not played for laughs. It's played for action and intrigue. Like it's like a crazy sci-fi almost. Okay. The main character, she goes home and a singing telegram appears at her door. And as she sings to this girl's roommate, the roommate explodes. And so
that's the theme of the book.
The singing telegram says, well, hey, looks like you need a new roommate. Can I move in?
Oh, my gosh.
And she's like, I guess so. Do you have any stuff? And she's like, no, everything I'm wearing, that's pretty much all I own, and that's it. And she moves in, and she's the new roommate. I mean, it's just – but again, it's not played like, ha-ha, funny, we're watching, you know, this crazy sitcom where all this weird stuff is happening. It's played like the world is just crazy and insane, and this is a normal day in this world, and weird stuff like this happens. And so – well, I was going
to say
the one thing with it, though, is that the artwork is really clean and really nice. It doesn't stand out as being very stylistic one way or another. So it just has kind of like a classic comic book type style. Again, very clean. So it just has this air of everything is normal, and it adds to that, like I said, that weird feeling, like this is just a normal day in the life of these people, and this is what the world is like. You have these aliens from another world that use Earth as a place that they can come have their business meetings, and they meet at these, you know, just motels that have a weird conference room that they can just sit in and not be interrupted in, and they're talking about raising, you know, a new type of meat so they can have these intergalactic space burgers, and again, that's not a humorous scene. It's just a scene of a slice of what's happening on this planet. So the book has this, you know, I don't want to say acid trip because that kind of conveys like colors are going to come alive and speak and whatever. But it is really a disconnected from reality type feeling to the book. But there's nothing in it that ever like breaks beyond like, wow, that is too wild and too crazy. No one is ever shocked by what they see. Nothing is ever, you know, too out of line with what's going on around there. So it just has that kind of unsettling feeling to it where you're not sure what the limits of reality are in this book. Like, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea really what we're supposed to learn from this first issue other than a bunch of these random people going through their day and their days just happen to be insane. But it was definitely intriguing. Like, when I got done with it, I honestly thought to myself, I don't know what just happened, but I want to see what happens next. So it definitely was an interesting and good first issue, but you know where this is going to lead, I have absolutely no idea.
Mm-hmm. The way you described it kind of sounds like that Prez book a little bit, because I kind of had some of those feelings. It wasn't anything of that craziness, but it seemed kind of out there and was going
right,
as far as field, what normally DC would do type of stuff.
Yeah, the young girl as president of the United States, right, which makes absolutely no sense, but nobody thinks twice about it. It just happens, exactly. They move on.
A lot of stuff going on, so.
But yeah, I mean, I recommend taking a look through it. I mean, flip through it, definitely. It's definitely intriguing.
My question was going to be, is that burrito of the Chipotle variety that gave everyone acid indigestion and heartburn?
No, because only one character actually eats from the burrito, and he's not even a major part of the story. The burrito is only there so that one of the characters can enter into this universe.
By the way, if Chipotle wants to be a sponsor of the Comic Book Chronicles, we will welcome you with open arms.
I don't know about that.
They've had too many issues.
Yeah, and isn't life about getting shot out of a burrito? I think that's what the takeaway of this always is.
What that tells you is that you should stick to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, and that is Panda Express.
Yes.
There you go.
Now, Panda Express wants to be a sponsor of the Comic Chronicles. You can send us an email at thecliknation@gmail.com. So would you say, Dirt, that this is new reader friendly as far as someone going in that has no...
Yeah, because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you've read Doom Patrols before, I don't think. I mean, it's going to make reference to a character, and you're just going to be like, who the heck is this person? But their appearance in the book is so minor that it's just kind of a goofy aside. But again, it doesn't explain itself, and it doesn't seem to be leading anywhere, so you don't know exactly where it's going. So, yeah, if you just absorb it for what it is, and what it is just this weird, quirky, insane story, over the top, bizarre sci-fi. Like maybe in a way, like if you think of a movie like Brazil or 12 Monkeys, where it's absolutely insane and crazy, and some of the stuff is funny because it's amusing because of how weird it is, but it's not like at any point you're guffawing and slapping your knee at how hilarious it is, you know? It has that same type of feel to it.
So you're saying it's a burrito wrapped in an onion?
Oh, no.
Burrito's definitely got to be the feature image for tonight's show image.
Well,
all right.
And the one funny thing is that this is actually a play on that album cover. With the banana. And of course, the name just escaped me. But it was an Andy Warhol piece on the album cover of a bit. Was it Lou Reed? I think it was a Lou Reed album.
Velvet Underground.
There it is. That's it. Oh. Yeah. That had the banana on it. So this cover is a play on that. I was hoping, you know, because it has the thing about the writing on it. I was hoping it'd be a sticker on the front of the comic, but I doubt that's going to happen. So anyway. All right. So I would recommend, you know, definitely reading it, but it is bizarre.
Cool.
All right, what's next?
Anyone else read Skyborne number 1 from Boom Studios?
I did.
I picked up a physical copy, though.
So I read this earlier in the week, so let me see if I can actually remember what it was about. I forget the main character's name now. It was a guy with, was it three children?
Lazarus,
thank you.
Lazarus had three children, and the three children are immortal, and they have superhuman strength, and they're supposedly impenetrable.
But the issue only deals with the daughter, is the star, the main character of this first issue. And she's tracking down an artifact that we come to find out was... Was it the sword, King Arthur's sword?
Yeah, Excalibur.
Excalibur, thank you. But then something happens to her, and we're left wondering. I don't want to spoil anything. So
yeah, I know. I know exactly what you're doing, but yeah.
Yeah. She also battles some like wizard person.
Merlin.
Was that supposed to be Merlin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Merlin.
They never said him by name, though, did they?
Yeah, you're just supposed to, I guess, understand that that's who he is. But yeah, so Merlin's trying to get Excalibur back for one magical reason or another, and apparently that's a bad thing, and she works for a group of the so-called good guys. Here, actually, we'll pull it up. There's her, and she's trying to recover it. And the funny thing is, there is a book from Image called Lazarus about this female assassin who has a sword and a gun, who fights for this family who's like this mob boss type family, and they've carved out different chunks of the world that they all fight over. I don't know. There's a lot of funny little. I don't know if he's taking digs at these other books or if it's meant to be a like an homage to these other books. But yeah, if you've read Lazarus, there are some fun little things that they throw in here that are. Obviously a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge back at that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing about the book is that it's very cinematic. Well, when you're reading the book, it really feels like you're watching like the layouts or storyboards to a movie. It really feels like he thought of the action scenes in motion and translated that into a comic, a printed page. That really stood out to me is how easily this book has been made so that they can turn around to a TV company or a movie production company and be like, hey, don't you want to make this into a movie?
Mm-hmm.
But the artwork is beautiful.
Which is interesting because you haven't heard much about the TV deal that Boom has with, I forget which studio it is, but they do have a first look deal in place.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten all about that until you said that.
Yeah, unless it was a short contract and it's expired, but there was something in place at one point.
I doubt it. It's probably still around. They just don't have any projects, or they're just in various phases of projects.
Right. But it's a 5-issue limited series, so we'll continue to keep an eye on it and see how the story progresses. But if you're a fan of Frank Cho's art, then this will be your cup of tea.
Yeah, and the story was fun. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, it's mainly action. There's not a whole lot of dialogue. You'll read through it pretty quickly.
Yeah, Frank Cho kind of skimps on the backgrounds, too.
It's like he did pretty well here, if I remember correctly, as far as backgrounds went. He had enough of them. I enjoyed the sort of bloody nature of it at times.
Yeah, and
kind of cartoon. It had cartoonish violence in it.
To it. Yeah.
Well, he gave a cover credit to the colorist, and the colorist actually fills in a lot of the details and backgrounds. And so I'm wondering if that was, you know, part of the deal, is that he left it open for them to paint, because they digitally paint a lot of color and a lot of accents and, you know, a lot of sky and clouds and all that stuff. You can see it's digitally painted in there. So that goes also along with making it look as pretty as it does. But yeah, I thought the story was pretty intriguing, and I thought the way they handled she refers to people that she doesn't like as a Mitch, which I don't know if you've ever heard that term before. It was new to me, but calling someone a Mitch, I won't explain what it is. You got to get the book and look it up for yourself, but that's a pretty good one. I might use that one myself at some point in the future.
And that's Skyborn number one.
Good stuff.
Who feels like recommending a book next?
Oh, I see. There? I'm flipping through my copy of Skyborn, looking up the definition of Mitch. Because I didn't read, I flipped through it, and you know, I like the art, so I picked it up. So,
is it anything like mucking?
Possibly.
That I haven't heard of.
Quick, let me pull up Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, right.
No, well, if you watched the recent episode of Atlanta, or the first episode of Atlanta.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah.
I see it, Mitch. It's pretty self-explanatory.
What'd you read this week, Agent 70?
All right. I noticed that there was kind of a theme to some of the books that I had downloaded and decided to read. There's a lot of feelings being expressed this week in a lot of these books. Lots of feelings. The first one where there were lots of feelings being expressed was Batman number 6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who's breathing into their mic?
Probably me. Sorry.
Okay. Just checking.
Let me move it up here.
Because I was just like, is Darth Vader here? In all seriousness, though, I believe it's Phil. Is it Phil Lynott on this? Yeah, it is. It's Ivan Reis. That's what I remember noticing right away. Is that Ivan Reis is the artist on this issue? Tom King is back, obviously, as the ongoing writer. We pick up pretty much at the right from where we left off. With a spoiler alert, Gotham Girl on her own, and she's not coping very well.
Not at all.
No, she is not coping well at all. And she's basically trying to deal with the events of the last issue and, without spoiling too much, kind of being alone in the world. And she's, you know, just dealing with that change in her status quo and dealing with the new status quo. And she's basically running amok in Gotham and dealing with some of these grade G villains that are in the issue that I don't know if I want to pull out an old school DC Who's Who to see if I can look them up. And I didn't feel like Googling them, but they're running amok in Gotham. And Gotham Girl kind of deals with them in her own way. I don't want to say unique, because it's a pretty tried and true trope, but yeah, she deals with them in her own way, and Batman's not too keen on this, and he basically, like I said, helps her deal with her feelings. And it's very I kind of thought it was a little ham-handed. I kind of thought it was a little out of left field, but then we're dealing with very new incarnations or reincarnations of these characters, and so what we see them do, how we see them act, is very much in the hands of the new creators, and we need to get used to maybe the new way these characters sometimes approach problems.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I recently was rereading some old Batman comics from the 70s.
Right.
And Batman and Commissioner Gordon are trying to track down this killer, and one of the police officers is like, you know, he can't be in here. You got to get Batman out of here. He's not an official police officer. And Batman turns to him and says, shut your mouth, Pops. We're trying to stop a killer. And I'm just sitting there thinking, oh my gosh. Like, this is so bizarre.
Yeah, it's so bizarre.
You know, shut up, Pops. We're trying to find a killer. So, you know, when you say that, that it's, you know, such a different take on him, he has not been the same for 75 years or 80 years, however long he's been out. So, you know, for someone to come in and change him a little bit, you know, I can see someone going, well, that's not the Batman I know, but there's a lot of Batmans out there that people are not familiar with, you know?
Right. So it was a very interesting interpretation of how Batman would deal with this particular problem. It's very much, I don't want to say sitcom-y, but it, you know, it's kind of, it almost felt like that.
Well, and
like an after school special type thing, you know, like way of reaching out and sharing feelings and
you talked about the G grade characters.
Yeah, the villains, yeah.
I don't know why you want to put down Kite Man. He seems like the greatest villain in the DC universe. Kite Man. But I wonder
what about Captain Stingery? I'm like, is that a real character?
But I'm wondering if these particular characters in these situations were chosen to lighten the mood. I mean, the Gotham girl pulls a Britney Spears in the first, you know, page and shaves her head, you know, because she's going so crazy.
I thought that was a shout out to the chick in Stranger Things.
Well, although considering how many months ago this had to have been put together, I doubt it. But
it felt like it.
But yeah, the way everything was, because you know, Tom King is not the type of guy who just does things randomly. Like everything's chosen for a reason. He's always so meticulous with the details and why he chooses to do things. So the fact that he chooses these random low level villains, whether or not they've ever appeared before, I don't even know. I don't even know if they have Wikipedia pages for guys like Kite Man. But I feel like part of that was to keep it a lighter mood. Like if she's out there and she's punching, you know, Two-Face or, you know, stabbing him in the eye or whatever because she's freaking out, that makes it so much darker.
Right.
Whereas if, you know, a guy, Kite Man, smashes through the window, grabs the pearls and smashes out the other window to fly off, that makes it a different level of villainy that just keeps the mood, you know, lighter and happier.
Sure. I mean, we start off with Colonel Blimp. I mean, really. it's Colonel Blimp,
people. And he's not a fat guy.
Right. And he's like, this, I have your submarine. Not really spoiling anything here, people. Yeah, it's submarine again.
It's a guy in a blimp who stole a submarine. Apparently for the second time.
And this time he wants $30 million. I did have a ball reading this because of that, some of that stuff that Tom King decides to put in.
And when they do have the conversation, when Batman does show up and try to talk to her, she does freak out. And, you know, you can obviously see that she's having massive, massive mental problems.
Yeah.
So there might also be something there where, you know, you don't want to put a stigma on it that's going to get you a letter writing campaign also. So keeping it, you know, on a certain level where people aren't going to be offended if they have family members that are dealing with, you know, particular issues. So.
Sure.
That might have something to do with it also. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good read.
I have noticed that Tom King's Batman is a man of very few words. Like Snyder's Batman seems to talk a lot more. At least there's more dialogue between like Alfred and Batman or Batman and other characters. Here it's like Batman just says like five words total in a sentence. I know. I know. I know.
He does do that in this issue. That is a good call.
Only because, but here's the thing: those short "I know" sentences make it feel like he's Robin Williams in Good Will Hunting. You know, it's not your fault. You know, so that just that was the imagery I just got. So
all good. All right. So that's Batman number six.
Yep. How about we stay on the theme of feelings? Nothing more than feelings. Did anyone read all new, all different Avengers number 14?
Yes.
All right. So tell me if I'm wrong, Roddy, if this doesn't fit into this week's theme of feelings.
You're not wrong.
So what we have is not a standalone issue, because it does weave its way even tangentially into the theme of Civil War II. There is a Civil War II.
Really, it's just catching up.
Basically. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's that is a good way to put it, because what it does is it catches up the characters of Wasp and the what we learn to be the all new. Was it what's her new book going to be? The all new, not all new, all different.
I think it's all new, all different Wasp.
Unbeatable, unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Yeah, the unstoppable Wasp.
There we go. Wait. Is it unstoppable? I thought it was Squirrel Girl. Anyway,
no, unstoppable Wasp. Yeah, it's on the last page of the it's on the letters page. Mm. So, but yeah, getting back to the overarching theme of this week, we have what appears to be Russian officials trying to reclaim the long lost daughter of Hank Pym and bring her back to Russia. I hesitate to call it Mother Russia, but the Wasp basically sees through their ruse, and it turns out they are spoiler alert, agents of Whisper, and you know, shenanigans ensue. But ultimately, what we get to is the daughter of Hank Pym, basically coming to grips with what is kind of a debunking of what her idea of the American superhero is, and she has to deal with that in a pretty, you know, semi-dramatic way. She kind of has like a mini breakdown dealing with this.
And let us put this out there that Nadia is flexes that she hasn't been around these people before, and she like it just said, she has her idea of what's going on. Slightly not just it kind of reminds me of Sandy Moon a little bit, but
yes,
but a little bit away from that. But it was but it's also good to note that she's also a young girl, not young as in like kid young, but she's like a teen, like a early 20s, I guess, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still, her world's still being shaped to a point. And also that I found it weird that she took it the way she did, but also found it even weirder the way Janet was taking it, because she was just like, oh yeah, this is just another, not just throwing it off, but she was just like, yeah, you know, this kind of thing happened between people and our thing, you gotta understand this other. But Nadia was not taking what was been going on well, as pointed out already.
You know, it was just this weird, like, you know, I'm not sure how to deal with this conflict. I'm going to shut down. Oh, wait, I can try to fix this.
Mm-hmm. So, this is where we see shades of her father, because she feels herself has the notions to fix it, and she goes to try to do so, which doesn't work out, which Jan ends up coming to, you know, comfort her about, as she has done with her dad.
Right. There's a line in here that made me think of, you know, this kind of overarching theme. I don't remember what I read first. I think I did read Batman first, and then I read All New, All Different Avengers number 14. There's a line in here, and I'm going to ring the spoiler bell just in case you guys were going to read this. There's a line in here where Jarvis is basically talking to Janet Van Dyne, the classic Wasp, the OG Wasp. And basically Jarvis tells her that, you know, she's one of the world's preeminent minds when it comes to dealing with geniuses who believe human problems can be solved in a laboratory. Mm. And Janet, as she's going after Nadia, the new Wasp, here goes Janet Van Dyne, the feelings Avenger. And that's what kind of led me to, you know, realize that there is kind of an overarching theme with a lot of the books that were out this week.
Mm-hmm. It's worth also pointing out that this book was co-written between Mark Waid and Jeremy Whitley.
Yes.
And if you probably don't know that name, I know Jeremy Whitley did a book called something about businesses. I can't remember what it is, though, but I should look that up. But he's been doing some stuff lately, and I think this is one of his first Marvel works, and I think he's actually the one, that's why I brought this up, because he's the one that's actually writing an Unstoppable Wasp.
Right. That'll be coming out in early 2017, according to the note here in the letters page.
Right.
All right, cool.
What I keep on the feeling train, I got one. Supergirl number one.
Okay. Who else read that? Anybody?
I read it.
Yeah, me too.
Cool.
It was good.
So yeah, I kind of enjoyed it. I was trying to figure out where this placed, like whether this was a past story, because I'm not, like, so there's a lot of the DC stuff I'm not up on it enough. Did she have a rebirth issue? I don't remember.
Yeah, there was a rebirth special that was basically just a big fight. And then it set up that she was going to have this new home life with these parents.
Right. Which basically it seems like you could almost take this from, this is the past, this is almost the past of the TV show, if you know her from that part. Because you see her, you know, as a teenager, as she is with her parents trying to learn how to drive and not really. And apparently this is not too long after she's gotten to Earth and gotten, you know, settled in with these folks. So it looks like you see her try to understand driving and school, even though you see flashes of her in the past from in Krypton, her being at the top of her class or being very smart at science and whatnot. But you cut to her here on Earth and you see her struggling with like a projector, which granted, the funny part about that is I don't even know if schools even use those kind of projectors anymore. So that was kind of...
Well, it depends on their budget, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. So,
But yeah, she the New 52 series had her coming to Earth and fighting alongside Superman, but then she only has like one or two friends, and then a villain attacks, and she freaks out, and she thinks her friend turns against her, so she leaves and goes into space, and she ends up becoming one of the Red Lanterns. They did that whole thing. So she, even though she had an old series, her series never really had much of an Earth life to it. She never really had a Clark Kent. I can't think of the term. Secret Identity. There it is. Gosh, I'm having a stroke. But you know, it never really dealt with any of that like day to day being a human stuff. She was always just pretty much, I'm from Krypton. I can defeat everything, and you know, never really, had to deal with that. So this is the first time in the new version of since Flashpoint that she's had to deal with actually pretending to be a human.
Right. And she's not taking, well, she's kind of impatient with you know, with things. Her parents, or quote unquote her parents, are trying to help her acclimate as best as they can, but you know, she recognizes like, hey, this is not Krypton. Like, this is still the early days of her being on Earth, so she's kind of frustrated. And, you know, like, this is not Krypton, it'll never be, and she's a stranger, and, you know, this and other. Then she ends up going to the Fortress of Solitude, which I'm guessing this is where the present, this is actually in the present, because that's the only thing that made me think about this.
Yeah, because she, like I said, in her last series, she never dealt with having to be a human and deal with that human stuff. So this is the first time that she's ever had to deal with, you know, having to, like, she goes, I can fly, why would I ever drive a car? You know, right. But it's like, people drive cars, you have to learn how to do this. It's that type of stuff that was never dealt with before in the other series because it was much more cosmic in its scope.
Mm-hmm. I like the transitions from showing her thriving as a young scientist in school on Krypton to being like this super student to sort of struggling on Earth to play dodgeball or work a projector in class, just showing how, you know, things were easy for her on Krypton, but here on Earth, trying to fit in, even though she has this higher intellect, to fit in with everyone else and use this primitive software and hardware, as she calls it, show just how she struggles to be an Earthling.
I liked the story, but I was not a big fan of the artwork. That was one thing about the Rebirth special, is that the artwork, this particular cover, was, you know, the artwork that you saw ahead of time, and that's what I thought the Rebirth special was going to be, was this artist, but they had someone else do the Rebirth special, and I was like, oh, maybe that's just, you know, promotional artwork or whatever, but no, this is the artist actually doing the series, and I didn't particularly care for it in this book. It's just, I don't know if it's, if you want to say it's too anime style, but the eyes just seem like really big to me.
It's very anime, sort of vibrant animation type style.
Like heads, to it. Yeah, heads just have like this weird, these weird shapes and weird proportions to them. That it's a stylistic choice. It's, you know, okay, but it's not my cup of tea.
Hmm. I would think that it would probably be safe to say that people who know Supergirl from the TV show would probably be interested in this, because there are, it's not necessarily set in that world, but there are some things that kind of seem similar.
Well, how well do you think the Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic compares to the TV show, and how much crossover do you think there is between viewers?
Well, I mean, as of recent volumes, I don't think. I mean, well, I guess
that book's still coming out.
Not that much.
Yeah, they still make it.
Yeah, it's still coming out.
They just did the big thing with Coulson leaving.
That's right. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like last month. Yeah,
it was a great homage cover to an old Mike Zeck Captain America cover. That's what I remember most about that.
You remember the cover more than the story?
Yeah, because the cover is awesome. It's one of my favorite Cap covers. Like, it was when he had to surrender the shield, you know, like, who would be Captain America, and Super Patriot took over. So it's the flag bleeding down behind him. And they did that with the shield logo bleeding behind Coulson. It was a great homage.
But to answer your original question, and I wonder just how much crossover there is from fans of the Supergirl show to the comics.
Well, there's got to be some.
They're probably, yeah, if I have gone into my shop and have seen people kind of go in and be like, hey, you know, does this have a book or whatnot? And sure enough, like, somebody actually asking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, but I'm not sure. But I know Supergirl was one.
Well, one thing that I thought was kind of weird about the series was, for as much as we get of Supergirl, you know, working with the DEO and, you know, fighting these villains and stuff, we see her at school, but we don't really see her interacting with any other kids. You know, you don't really see her having to deal with, you know, bullies or people who think she's weird or, you know, any of that type of stuff. And they just announced a couple days ago that there's a second Supergirl series coming out. Hmm. And it's like Supergirl Being Super, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be focused more on the day-to-day life of being a teenager and a kid and dealing with the stresses of high school, supposedly. Yeah, and learning how to use powers and stuff like that.
Yeah, showing her first, I guess, months or years on Earth. I think that's how they build it.
And this book does have, like, they show her in high school and stuff like that, but yeah, you're right, it's nothing just drawn
it's
out.
Not like, you know, Miles Morales, where three-fourths of the issue is him talking in the cafeteria, and then, you know, there's two pages of a battle, and then his parents are freaking out for the rest of the book.
Right, you just see the couple of panels of her being in school, and you see this other character that's on the cover shows up and sees some interest in her, or whatever the case may be, or maybe as a rival, we don't know at this point.
It's kind of the opposite of Spider-Man, actually, at this point. I'm wondering if that's a choice. We're going to cut down on all the kid dialogue and show you more of stuff getting beat up and actual fight scenes. But we'll see where it goes in the future. But yeah, again,
this is only a miniseries, correct? Or
no, this is an ongoing.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see.
What's next?
Well, if we still want to talk about feelings.
I was about to say, okay, President Bartlett. That's a West Wing reference to anyone that is listening.
There was another Marvel book that dealt with feelings.
What Marvel book is that?
Well, that would happen to be Invincible Iron Man 13.
Yes, more feelings!
This was the
more
feelings. Because
feelings!
This issue drove me up the wall.
Oh, no.
Okay, so Tony Stark met this lady, this woman, the scientist, and he went out on a date with her, and the date went fine. And then, like, he maybe had dinner with her one more time, and then he faked his death, went on a secret mission, didn't talk to anybody. She thought he was dead forever. She took a new job. She moved to a different town. And then he shows up and goes, oh, but I love you.
Feeling.
It's like, how does he love her? He hasn't seen her in like 2 months. He pretended he was dead, and he only went out on like two dates with her.
And they had sex, and I think he actually did profess his love or tried to before that. I mean, before he faked his stuff, actually. But yeah, it has been a good span between those times. So,
and somehow facially, Tony Stark morphed into, I was going to say, Luke Perry with the goatee.
What?
Actually, I mean, I hadn't seen this issue, but it seemed like I was going to ask that since this series started, because I've been trying to catch up on it, and I was like, why does he look like, you know, Benjamin Bratt, Luke Perry, whoever, you know, like, why does he
Diodato taking some liberties there, man.
One thing that drives me nuts about this book is Diodato doesn't put any lines around his panels, so they feel like they're just kind of floating there. Unless
some
like
of them,
in a big battle, it seems like he'll draw lines around them. But otherwise, when people are just like talking or they're, you know, walking through some, you know, random place or whatever, and so you just, I don't know, it just, to me, it feels, I look at some of these pages, especially with the close-ups on the faces, where he draws minimal lines on the faces and lets the colorist come in and actually give it the shading and depth.
Right.
And it feels like a half-finished sketched page that someone, you know, just blacked it in and then they put some colors in it and called it done. And I just look at so many of these pages and it feels unfinished. Mm-hmm. And it looks like he's using these clip art photos and the expressions on some of the faces are way to the extreme. as these
because
people
they're
are
expressing
talking,
feelings.
I guess, but oh my god! Like I was just reading this, going, "This is not good. Like, what is going on here?"
Yeah.
And here's the other thing that really bugs me about this title is that this is issue 13, and we know now that this book is a bridge between Tony Stark Iron Man and Riri Williams Ironheart and Victor Von Doom. Some other Iron Man, what incorrigible Iron Man. I don't know what, I forget what they called him, but
infamous
Iron Man. Infamous, as Chevy Chase would say. No, but the series being a bridge from Tony Stark to these other characters, where are these other characters? Like, where have they been? Like, Riri Williams is supposed to take over this series, and yet, like, she's been in maybe a total of 12 pages over 13 issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know
well,
what I mean?
I think that goes back to the line of they originally created her to probably have a supporting role, and then at some point they decided to pivot, and it's like, oh, we can just make her the new Iron Man character for the foreseeable future. Let's start giving her more focus. I think they originally said that wasn't the plan for her to take over the series.
But it's like, where is she? Like, if she's supposed to be taking over...
She was in the last issue of...
Yeah, but she's not in this issue, and instead we got...
Yeah, we're jumping back and forth to cover the main characters that they're going to be spinning off. Like, this issue highlights a lot of Doom, you know, and kind of sets up Doom, whereas I think what Tim is getting at is that the last issue really highlighted where we're headed with Riri Williams.
Yeah, but I don't feel like it's really established her character. Like, she's taking over, but why? Why does she want to be a hero? Why
you have to wait to the end of Civil War II to find out.
Yeah, it's more. Yeah, we're dealing with more of the discovering how much she can do with the armor that she's put together so far.
But at this point, like, I'm already half ready to give up on the series. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting a good Iron Man story that makes me care about Tony Stark, and these other characters are going to take over, and I don't feel like I've gotten enough about them that I care about them taking over. You know, there's a balancing act that has to be done, and it hasn't happened.
I agree.
I'm still waiting for that right balance to come, and it has never hit the perfect place.
I agree.
That's the problem of we're in the middle of one event, but we already know what the next thing coming out of this is going to be.
And the big event's been delayed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I know I wasn't on last week. You know, I had water leaking out of my ceiling. That was something I had to deal with. But I wanted to come on and desperately talk about the fact that all these Civil War crossovers last week were three issues behind.
Yeah.
Where everyone's talking about, oh, the Hulk could be a problem. We might have to do something about Hulk. It's like, yeah, they did something. We've moved on.
They kind of
mentioned it.
So. Was Uncanny Avengers last week? Because that had Deadpool trying to bail Hawkeye out of prison. So it's like some of them were up to date and others weren't.
But Hawkeye's already now. He's already had the trial and is out. Mm-hmm. So even that's behind.
Yeah, that's behind.
Know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah,
as I said on Twitter last night, the Civil War delays have made me read less of Marvel and more of the competition. Because I don't care. Like everything, I guess last week had some books that I cared about, but like this week I was just like, I didn't read any Marvel this week just because I hadn't really made time to get around to it. And I don't even know when the next issue of Civil War comes out. Actually, is it next week? All I know, I've seen promo artwork of like all the heroes fighting each other and Doctor Strange doing some spells to Storm and someone else. And but I don't even know when the book actually comes out now. And I don't know when this series is supposed to end since they added another extra issue. Is it going to end before December?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't they say November, I thought, because I don't of that? Know. Or is it October or November? Wait, no.
Yeah. I'll be eating Thanksgiving turkey when the series finally ends.
And it's going to be all new, all different, shattered logo Marvel Now.
Like, yeah. We'll be in the same place as we were, I think, this time last year.
My favorite Civil War tie-in so far has been the adjectiveless Spider-Man book, just because it's hadn't really tied in. Actually, has it? Yeah, I guess it has tied in a little bit, but it's still doing its own story of Jessica Jones investigating Miles Morales for Miles's grandmother, and the art's nice.
I find myself falling back on books like Spidey, which came out this week. Like I love this book. Just generally speaking, like this and Web Warriors were are two great titles. And in this one, I'll just segue into it because I can, and I'm here, and I took over the show.
Ah!
And in this book, Spidey is teaming up with Captain America for the first time.
Right, and that's why I picked up a physical copy of this issue. It's awesome.
Yeah, we always buy that physical copies. My son loves this book. And this was a great, again, a great, fun Saturday morning style. You get the team up. You get J. Jonah Jameson being a jerk and Captain America basically telling him off at the end. You get the fights with the villains, and you get the whole, you know, young guy looking up to the older veteran asking, you know, why do you do it? Why do people see you as a hero? How do you, you know, maintain your sanity being a hero? All of that, you know, type of stuff. It's one of those, you know, good, I don't know if you'd call it a coming of age story, but definitely, you know, dealing with the idea of the great power comes great responsibility, mm-hmm. you know, sticking to it, even though everybody hates him type of thing going on. And the artwork was really nice in this too. So it just like the whole package came together. This was just a really nice, you know, sliver, a one and done story that could fit somewhere random in continuity. We don't know. We know it is continuity. We just don't know exactly where.
Right. It's the new Marvel sliding continuity.
Yeah. Their rubber band continuity right. that they use. But this was a good issue. I enjoyed it. My son loves it. And this is definitely one of those books where if you've got, you know, an 8-year-old kid, a 12-year-old kid, you know, looking at comics for the first time because they finally saw the Avengers movies or whatever, this is something you can give them that they don't have to know a lot of history to get into. But at the same time, if you know someone who's like in their 50s and they're like, well, I remember when you could just pick up an issue and you get the whole story. Well, here you go, you know, and it's a good story. You'll like it. And someone who read it when everybody was wearing bell-bottom pants can still identify with everything that's happening in this book. It's right. so true to the characters.
I just wanted to add that there's also another demographic that this book would be really helpful to, and that's someone that that demographic are people who just want to read something fun and positive and just have like a great time reading it. Because in all honesty, I was reading this and I just had a big smile on my face the whole time. One, it's because Cap is in this, and you know, as a huge Captain America fan, I was just kind of looking for just like a kind of old school, kind of straight ahead interpretation of the character, and that's what I got here. And reading, you know, reading some of the back and forth, and some of the inner narration that Spidey does during you know the adventure, where you know he's describing what it's like teaming up with Cap. I mean that you know that was just awesome. That was just some great reading. So you know that was a lot of fun. I definitely was surprised at how much I enjoyed this. I picked it up because I liked the idea of seeing a new spin on Spidey's first team up with Cap. You know, there's a great action sequence when they fight the kind of the main bad guy of the issue. I don't want to spoil everything, but Cap talks about playing a game of catch. And that was really well done. You know, this 2-page splash.
Yeah, I also like the first time Cap approaches Spider-Man, and he's like, you know, I've heard of you, says something like that. And Spider-Man's mm-hmm. like, oh, you've heard of me? I mean, you have. I mean, I've heard of you also as well, too. Yeah. And then you just see Spider-Man sitting there going, I am the worst.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's obviously a modern take on you know, on how that particular interaction might go down, you know?
Yeah, and MODOK is just—he's such a bizarre character.
Mm-hmm.
In general, like he's an absurd, ludicrous character, and for him to be the one that they're fighting, it goes back to, you know, picking your villains well, and Tom King, King picking Kite Man and sure. And Captain Blimp, you know, picking MODOK,
well, Colonel Blimp, I think,
or Colonel Blimp, yes. You know, just, you know, picking the right villain for telling the story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a great, you know, and maybe I'm just a sucker for like corny Cap lines, but Cap comes in and says, you know, Spidey asks, you know, how is it that people, you know, why is it that people love you so much? And Cap is basically like, reputations. I even read it in like a Cap-like voice, you know, in my head. Reputations come and go. Sometimes you're a good guy. Sometimes you're a bad guy. All that matters is what you do next. And I'm like, yeah, Cap! That's so funny. And finally, I wanted to wrap this up with a bit of a comeuppance that good old JJJ gets at the hands of Cap at the end of the issue.
Yeah.
And, Dirt, did you notice what the last panel showed?
The last
panel of the book.
The last panel of the book right. is... Oh,
we're, Right, because two pages, one page before, Cap says, referring to Spider-Man, he's not a menace. I know what a menace looks like, and it zooms into a particular feature.
On his little mustache. Yeah. And then in the last panel, he shaved it off.
I thought that was a nice touch.
That little Charlie Chaplin Adolf Hitler mustache.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch. I got a real kick out of this book this week. It is definitely a candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Nice. Do you want to do some more? Are we in rapid review time?
Let me grab a couple here. Moon Knight.
Yes.
This is another book that's just so good.
It's so zany. You're not 100% sure what's going on, and that's what's so good about it.
This is another one where he's flipping through what is... He's having these hallucinations or, in some cases, maybe flashbacks or... whatever, to all these different incarnations of himself that have appeared over the years, or in one case, I don't know if he's ever been an outer space guy. I think that's all new.
That was awesome with James Stokoe art.
Yeah. And so you've got the framing sequences that have quote unquote normal artwork, but then he has one of these episodes. And when he goes into one of these episodes, that's where you have the guest artists coming and filling in these, sequences. And the story, the end of the last arc, it looked like it was going to wrap up, and I was kind of afraid of what was going to happen next, because it looked like Moon Knight was finally getting his sanity back. He had escaped the mental hospital. It looked like all of this stuff had wrapped up, and now in this new arc, nope, it's not over. Right. Like, this is, Jason jumped back out of the lake, and now it's time for round two, For everything supposedly seeming normal, it's just as messed up as it was before, but now it's messed up in a different way, and he's got a different life, and he's trapped in a different reality. And it's just great to see how he's been able to, how Jeff Lemire has been able to take this character and move him through this entire arc, and you feel like the character moved, and there was growth, and there was action, and you got a beginning and an end, and yet here you are at the beginning of the second arc, and it's a throwback to what we just finished, but it feels new and refreshing and like it's once again moving forward and growing, and it's so good. Like, I'm blown away by how awesome this book has turned out, because Moon Knight, has always been one of those second tier Marvel characters, but just like Vision has just been this gem of a book that came out of nowhere, this particular run of Moon Knight just seemingly came out of nowhere and is just so good, and it's so true to the character in so many ways, while bringing in a new aspect and just twisting everything around and making it so interesting.
Yeah. Agreed.
That was a couple of things. The issue had of particular interest to me, like at the beginning part where they were on the movie set, and the shot gets cut. I almost expected a Christian Bale like rant to go on right after that, but they didn't go that far with it. And
but they were riffing on Marvel Studios.
Yeah, and that part too was just like, oh man, that was. Sure, there you go. Like, that is not the first time people have thought like that. I'm quite sure. So
yeah, there's even a line where it's like, I should have never let Marvel talk me into producing this mess. I mean, Moon Knight is a third rate character at best. What was I thinking? Exactly.
That was the line. Yep.
Yep.
So that was pretty good. And then, of course, the last part is with the space part, as Age of 7 alluded to, that part was pretty great. Just kind of just jumped to something else real quick, and it's like, okay, how the hell we get here?
Yep.
And the thing that amazed me is a couple months ago, we had someone come in and trade in a bunch of Werewolf by Night comics. And of course, one of those was the first appearance of Moon Knight. And here we go in outer space. He's flying into space, and the people he's taking on are the Space Wolves. Space Wolves will take the moon, they shout as they're coming into attack. So even this reference at the end of the book where he's fighting these Space Wolves is even a throwback to Moon Knight's first appearance in a werewolf comic book. I just thought that was hilarious as well.
Mm. Well, if you look in the letters page, there's a preview of the cover of the next issue. At the end of the letters page, they tease.
Oh, and they show the werewolf.
Oh, yeah. That's it for this issue. But tune in next month when we go to the moon. Alice to the moon. So, and they show a profile of Werewolf by Night. So,
yeah, that is it. Again, like, this is the same thing that that they were doing on the Batman book, where they were pulling in the fact that Batman had a long lost brother, and that brother actually appeared a couple random times in some 70s comics and was never seen again, and they brought him back as a character. And here in Moon Knight, they're going back and they're pulling out all of these references and these small things that that they mean something outside of the world of comics, but they don't necessarily mean anything within the story of Moon Knight in the Marvel Universe. But to, you know, take it out, you know, and look at it as more the history of the character and those big appearances and things like that, just to me, I love when they throw in those kinds of references. You know, maybe you get them, maybe you don't. It doesn't matter if you don't get those little wink, wink, nudge, nudge moments, but at least they're there. And when you catch them, it's just so satisfying to see it.
Absolutely. All right. Are we in rapid fire yet?
Let me do one more in depth before I start spouting off quick ones. And this one, I mean, you got to know it's coming from me. We had a new Sheriff of Babylon this week. And I actually sat down and reread the entire series leading up to this issue. Because at the end of the last issue, they started talking about something that happened at the beginning that set off the entire chain of events that have led to the story. So I went back and read the whole thing to come back to here. And two things really surprised me. And one is how little time has actually passed now that I think about it, because, you know, the issues come out every month. So this is issue number 10, you know, it's been technically speaking 9 months because you've got one at the beginning and one at the end there. So, but technically 9 months for the 10 issues to come out. So it feels like a long time, but when you go back and read, it's really maybe a couple weeks that this entire story has taken place in. And because of the gravity of everything that's happening, there's so many deep scarring things going on, because you know, obviously you're dealing with the war, you're dealing with the terrorism, you're dealing with being in downtown Baghdad in Iraq, you know, after the invasion. So it feels like it's been so heavy and it's so long, but it really hasn't. But the other thing that really shocks me is how so much of this story is built on the unreliable narrator. And that is something I've mentioned a couple times before on this book, where you only know what's happening because someone tells you that that's what's happened, because they get intelligence briefings, they get reports from people out on the street, they get, you know, and you never know, is this person lying to manipulate you, or is that actually what happened? And there's so many things that you've taken for granted within this series as to who these people are, how powerful they are, where they come from, what they're actually trying to achieve and their terrorism and everything like this. And this is where the story, people start to find out what's really happening, what really led certain events to happen, why certain characters died was not the way that you thought. Certain people, you know, you as an American, American. You know, the main character in this book is, of course, a real stand-up guy. He's an honorable guy. You like this guy. He seems like, you know, the all-American guy you like. But you see other people within the military who are not likable guys, who are not stand-up guys, who are not, you know, always doing the most honorable, likable things. And you see, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's the idea that everybody speaks in terms of it's us or them. You know, it's the Americans or the Iraqis. Mm-hmm. But the Iraqis, you know, the way that they're portrayed is that most of them don't feel that way. They don't feel like it's a them or us. It's always a them or them, and we are caught in the middle. And so then this guy, you know, our sheriff, our hero, who's, you know, brought in to train the police and, you know, to be head of this department, he starts to realize that even within, you know, the Americans, what he sees is a them and a them, and us are stuck in the middle. You know, that the people within government, there are people doing things that you don't agree with. And then there are the terrorists out there and you don't agree with them either. And both sides are wrong. Both sides are making mistakes. Both sides are doing, you know, horrible, despicable things. But you're still in the middle, still trying to be honorable, still trying to be Captain America in the middle of this battle, shall we say. Mm. And so there's so many layers and so many things going on with these characters. There's a story that's being told in this book while another event is unfolding. So while something is unfolding in real time and they can't get the information they need about what's really going on, we're also getting the story of what led up to the events that happened in the first issue. And it was another situation where they didn't have all the information. They didn't really know what was going on. They jumped in head first and it caused problems, which led to what started the whole ball rolling. So it just boggles my mind as I read this book of how many layers Tom King has put to the story, that not only with, you know, a character who's backstabbing this character, who's manipulating that character, who's trying to get this because they only care about their family, as opposed to this person who's doing it for their, you know, zealotry or whatever. But at the same time, it's also the way he's told us the story, where he's understood where all these layers were as he told the story, and he gives you, you know, the bits of the story as it unfolds so that you think you understand, and then as soon as you have that level of understanding, he unfolds a new layer, you go deeper, and you see that, you know, everything you thought you knew, you were just taking for granted, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on underneath. And again, it's one of those stories that, I reread the entire thing going into this issue. I reread the entire thing when I went into, like, I think issue 5, I went back and reread them. I reread them again now going into issue 10. I think when the final issue comes out, I'm going to, you know, go back and reread everything leading up to it. It's just one of those books that, as I'm reading it, I'm rediscovering so many things that I had taken for granted as I read the story just because of that unreliable narrator. You think you know what's going on, and it's so deep, and it's so layered, and it's so structured, and it unfolds in such a way that it's just one of the best stories I think I've ever read in comics, period, bar none, in the history of comics, and it's only in this one series in 10 issues. Like, it boggles my mind how well done this story is. So, in case you haven't guessed, this might be a candidate for Click of the Week this week. I'm just throwing it out there, just in case. You know.
Yeah, we already know how that's going to go. So.
All right.
Rapid fire.
All right, so I got. Let me. Okay. Kick one, two out here real quick. Doctor Strange number 11. So we are in the aftermath of the last days of magic. Apparently, magic is still around and starting to come back slowly but surely. There are some magic that still works, but it's newer magic. A lot of the old stuff doesn't work. So I guess Doc is kind of figuring that out, one. And two, you see flashbacks to the past of when, after his accident and he lost the use of his hands, him trying to find a way to fix his hands, and one is presented to him that ends up not being taken. But we also see him going through a couple of other methods that he has tried. Apparently MGH was a thing when that happened, which, I mean, I don't think originally was, but, you know, hey.
Marvel moving, sliding timeline.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of strange. That was like, wait a minute. It's like, this character came way before MGH was a thing, but hey, we're going to let that go. But yeah, so you see him slide back into the past and in the present, where he is now. We also see an old foe, friend/foe of the Doc's come into play in the past and the future also. And that's looks like where it's going next. So we also see him battle a mythical creature, Negan style, for those Walking Dead folks. And it was pretty good. We don't this starts a new arc, and like I said, the person that shows up in pairs apparently is going to be the part of this arc. So we're going to see how that goes. But I enjoyed reading it. Cyborg Rebirth number 1. Also, I'll go ahead and pop that out there.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I guess this kind of goes back to the feelings thing, because there are some feelings that kind of come up in the course of this book. So I'm sorry, you were
gonna say something happened in this issue, right? Like a big reveal or.
Yes.
Sort of status quo change?
It appears to be the case. So we start off with Cyborg battling this creature, whatever, techno-organic creature called Malware, trying to get into Star Labs. The fight kind of goes back and forth during the course of the issue. But we also see another origin story, per se, because we go back to the birth of, the courtship, the meeting and courtship of Cyborg's parents, and then the, you know, Cyborg being, or Big being born, and then, you know, just kind of cutting through his origin story to when he became Cyborg. And all the while, there's a person or something that is monitoring Cyborg throughout the whole book, trying to see his responses and this and the other while he's fighting Malware. And we get to see who that person is, which I won't spoil it for anybody who wants to read it. But we get to see that person, but not only that, we also get to see Vic ends up in this hidden room that apparently his father had set up, and in this room while he's fighting, or after he finishes fighting Malware, he finds out some information that his father had recorded about himself that ends up being a game changer for Cyborg, for certain. And then, of course, we also see this other person that comes in at the play at the last page, who was also pretty much gonna change some things for old Vic. So, like, it was a pretty decent read.
One thing I just want to throw out there, I like the fact that they put him back in the costume that he got in Justice League.
Right.
I didn't really like that slick down metal look that he had, that RoboCop 2.0 suit that he was wearing. I like that they put him back in this other one, and they put the emblem back on his chest, because to me that's very much a DC superhero thing, much like the Bat symbol or the Superman symbol or you know, anything like that. Cyborg having that gear letter C symbol on his chest, I thought was a great piece of marketing that they came up with, and I love seeing that symbol. I want to get one of those T-shirts that looks like Cyborg's chest with that symbol on it. So I'm glad they went back to that. I thought that was a brilliant design when they brought it up. But yeah, this, I don't know if you'd call it a retcon, maybe, or if it's just because Cyborg's backstory was always just, well, his mom died when he was young and his dad was always hands off. You know, I don't know if they just decided to actually do something with that and flesh it out. But the story that they put together to explain it really helps you to empathize with his dad and with his family situation, that it's much more than just his dad was driven by his job. You know, it made it something much deeper, and it really brought a lot of weight to the character. And I think if they can continue to play on these things of what it means to be human or a robot, you know, is he real? Is he, you know, more man than machine, you know, that, you know, type of thing.
Right. Or is he just imprint of the person that he
right. That he I think that's a really great story if they continue to go down that rabbit hole. That's, to me, that's really interesting. Yeah. I like this series just from this Rebirth special. I already like this a lot more than the last series that just ended.
Which brings up another thing, because I was reading that last series, but I kind of stopped mid-stride for one reason or another, and I think change of writer may or not have to do it, even though I was still buying them, so I need to catch up and see if they actually put that stuff back the way it was then, or
right.
You know, it was just a jump cut to whatever it is now.
I'll be honest with you, I'm the same way. I bought every single issue, but after they got in that whole techno war thing with the aliens, and after that whole thing ended, I just kind of lost a lot of my interest in the series, and so I have them all sitting in a box, but I would just kind of flip through them. There may have been one or two that I read in depth after that, but yeah, it definitely lost a lot of steam, whereas this one seems to have a much better setup from the get-go.
Yeah, indeed.
Anything else?
Code Amber number 6, but there wasn't much to it. They're still trying to break out this hut. They were still trying to break out this hut from this prison. They still have Sinestro going against them. BB-8 saves Sinestro. The day. Yeah, there's this character named Agent Terex who works for the First Order, but he looks like Sinestro.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but, I've got Superman number 6.
Yep.
Potential click of the week. So it ends the first arc focusing on young Jonathan Kent and the Eradicator going after him because he has tainted his Kryptonian blood by being a half-breed, half Earthling, half Kryptonian. The battle's gone off into space as Superman has found some moon base that Batman created however long ago. Lois Lane has put on the New Genesis Batman armor from back in Batman and Robin when Batman was trying to resurrect young Damian Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
They defeat the Eradicator. I guess he has the souls of some Kryptonians in him somehow.
Yeah, that was the weird part of the story there. That was the part that I didn't really care for, but yeah.
And I guess earlier issues, he sucked up Krypto. And Superman, actually, because I think Superman actually ended up breaking out, freeing himself from him. But Superman, like, shoved his hand inside the Eradicator and pulled out Krypto, so Krypto was back.
Yeah. Yay!
Yay.
Like a burrito.
Like the burrito that always comes back up.
Oh.
That's a Chipotle burrito.
Oh, goodness. We're never going to get their advertising money.
That's fine.
But the real highlight comes, and as I said, the whole arc has focused on John Kent and him learning how to use his powers and Superman being his father figure, wanting to protect him, but then realizing he also has to sort of aid in John's development. And another spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
We have him christened Superboy at the end of the issue.
With a new logo.
That cover is awesome, by the way.
I got the variant. I always get the variant, and I like that one a lot, too.
Hmm.
I thought that was a nice piece of artwork as well.
Kenneth Block 4 cover looks like. But this was a feel-good issue. We have quick cameos from Batman and Wonder Woman at the end, because Superman takes a Superboy to the Watchtower.
Action, again, has been focused on action. It's a lot of punching and a lot of stuff blowing up in these big battles. And Superman has been focused a lot more on the family, on Lois and Jonathan and, dealing with that whole dynamic. And it's done a fantastic job. And this ending of the story is just like the perfect wrap up. This is 6 issues, so I'm guessing this is the first trade. It ends where you expect it to be. Like, it's not a surprise that it happens, at the end that, Jonathan is given this new identity and everything. But even though this is what we saw coming and we knew it was going to happen, it's a good type of payoff. It's not, they didn't have to swerve us, They didn't have to come in at the last moment and go, oh, well, here's a monkey wrench and the whole thing. And, the saga continues, whatever. They wrapped this bow up on the story and it was the perfect ending. It's exactly what the story needed to do. And it was great to see it happen.
So this is definitely my, between Action Comics and Superman, this is my favorite Superman book to keep up with.
Question.
Mm-hmm.
Does Cyborg Superman show up in this issue?
Cyborg Superman, no.
Okay, because I forgot to mention earlier that he shows up in one way, shape, or form in Cyborg and both in Supergirl.
Right.
So I figured it was a thing. I don't know.
So yeah, it's a return to the 90s with Eradicator and Cyborg Superman. And Superboy's back. All we're missing is Steel.
Actually, Steel was in Action Comics quite a bit on the last run. Yes. So he's been around for a while.
I didn't see Shaq.
He's being inducted into the Hall of Fame tonight.
He's also selling car insurance for the General. I don't know if you've seen those ads.
And to finish my last two quick ones are, let's see, Green Arrow number 6. It's sort of a one-off issue with a nice guest art from Steven Byrne. It mostly focuses on Miko. Sort of, it jumps back and forth from a year ago where she's living with Oliver and he's being the hard-ass drill sergeant brother, making her like clean and do a bunch of chores to make her responsible. And also, in the past, since he wants her to be involved in school and make new friends, she, of course, takes this and starts spying on her classmates that are acting sort of weird, which leads her to the Clock King and how he's sort of manipulating these young people. And in the present, we know that Miko turned on her mother, Shadow, and helped Oliver, and now Shadow is taking Miko somewhere. And we also learned that Shadow was perhaps a double agent as well. And the issue ends with Miko escaping from her mother, going on the run, encountering this like underground fight club crew, and then they somehow know who she is, and it's to be continued as she's surrounded by some villains. But I really enjoyed the art from Byrne. He did the art and colors for it. I think Green Arrow has had my favorite Rebirth art throughout the run so far, between this one from Steve Byrne, Otto Schmidt, who did the Rebirth in the first couple issues, and then moving on to Juan Ferreira. So this book is one of the highlights of Rebirth because it's selling a whole bunch of issues. Oh, and going back to the Superman and number 6 and Superboy, part of me hopes that he ends up joining the Teen Titans with Damian. I know they've got the Super Sons book that they've teased, but haven't actually announced who's the creative team behind it. But I'd like to see Superboy join the Teen Titans.
Put him back in the shirt.
And my last book, yeah, his hoodie shirt and sneakers. And
you don't want him to have his New Kids on the Block haircut and the gold earring and the leather jacket?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The right stuff.
I find this hysterical that Tim is singing with New Kids on the Block.
Because he knows the song by heart. You know he does.
I was a kid of the 90s, so I know the chorus for couple songs.
Goodness.
You know every word of that song.
Last but not least is Nightwing number 4, the end of this arc, as Nightwing teams up with Raptor to take down the Parliament of Owls, and they fight some big, weird creature, as you see on the cover here, somebody called Moloch. They steal this this book. I forget what they call it. History of the Owls. I wrote it down in my notes. Let's see. Book of Wisdom. So Nightwing steals the Book of Wisdom and gives it to Spiral. But luckily, Raptor didn't turn on Nightwing like I'm sure many people expected him to. We also learn a little bit about Raptor's history. He was a child of the circus as well. And he may or may not have known Nightwing's mother.
You know, Raptor...
But he's also... I was going to say, he also, I guess, was secretly working for the Cobra group as well.
Cobra!
Raptor was a character that I did not like him at all when they first introduced him. He was so unlikable. He was just kind of a dick. That's honestly... And so I was upset, you know, I mean, not like, oh, I'm never going to buy this again, rip it up, throw it in the trash, but it was just kind of like, ah, oh, man, I hope this guy doesn't become a recurring character. I really don't like this guy. But over the next, I think, issue 2, issue 3, they really worked to make him much more likable, that they just got off on the wrong foot, you know, the first time around. But, you know, once they actually started working together, got to know each other, you actually learned that he wasn't really all that bad of a guy. And, yeah, I totally expected him to be... you know, at the end of this story, to just be like, ah, and by the now I have to kill you, you know, type of thing. And it didn't happen. So, now I'm hoping that the guy reappears. So they did their work on that one. It worked out well.
Yep. Turned you into a fan.
I won't go that far.
Ah!
I'm not buying his action figure. I got 2 books to throw out real quick. First is Justice League. All I really want to say about this is that what I liked in the Geoff Johns previous Justice League was that he built these big epic stories that felt like you needed the Justice League there to work together to fight this giant fight. But there was also a lot of character interaction and a lot of stuff going on that just made the story a well-done, well-rounded story, and also explained the villain's motivations and everything, so it just became, you know, a much more interesting story. And this story... It's trying to do a big epic, the world is in danger, but it's so much of a direct to DVD Jean-Claude Van Damme action type the world's in danger, that it's just there are these giants and they want to sing, and somehow that's going to destroy all life on Earth, and there's a backup that they have these giant machines in the middle of the Earth that have been there for billions of years and nobody knew about it, and now they're going to drill a hole to the middle of the Earth to destroy everything. And then they have these little tiny robots. So Flash needs to go out there and stop all these little tiny robots. And none of the motivation really makes sense. None of the why there are these giant things that want to destroy Earth doesn't really make any sense. Why they built these robots doesn't make any sense. Why they have these giant machines in the middle of the Earth, you know, doesn't make any sense. It's just they built this big epic, oh, the world's going to be destroyed, but there's like nothing really to it. It's just, we need something for Superman to fight, so there's giant machines in the middle of the Earth, you know?
And only he can bury himself into the center of the Earth to
right,
do it.
Right, because if there was no Superman, then, oh, guess what? Justice League loses, you know? Everybody dies. Sucks. This is just not, it's just not good. It's not satisfying. I'm hoping that maybe the next arc will be a lot better, but I'm losing interest quickly in this one. But the other thing I wanted to pull up, if I can find the cover, here it is. 6, the final issue of 6. This is from George, now I've forgotten how you pronounce his name, Pelicanos, who was the writer of The Wire. This wraps up the story of his ragtag group of military guys. You get some final information that kind of explains their motivations for getting involved in this fight. It's a little bit deeper than what you thought was going on. You got a nice wrap up with some of the characters. It's a team of 6, but of course it doesn't end up being a team of 6. Not everybody makes it through this battle.
Hmm.
But it plays itself. It played itself out where at the end of 7, it really felt like that was the end of the series. I didn't really know what was left for an issue 8 because so much of issue 7 was, you know, everything built up to this big battle at this farmhouse against the Mexican drug cartels, and then they had the big battle, and the battle was over, and now some of the guys were staying, and some of the guys are moving on, and, you know, that felt like that was it. But then you find out that, obviously, drug cartels don't just like to lose, so there's one more, you know, trick up their sleeve, another ace that they're going to go for. It's a good story. It's well written. The artwork, you know, again, it's not the greatest coming from 451 Entertainment. So, you know, they don't have the greatest guys in the world, but it does its job. It's adequate. It gives you the information you need, and you don't get confused on which character's which. Everybody looks original enough, but it's nothing that's going to blow you away. But it's, again, it's a $3.99 book. It's like 40 some pages of story. It's thick. There's a lot that goes on in this book. It's very well written. It's another well-layered, well-structured story. Like I said, it holds out some of the information until the final issue so that things make a little more sense as you see some of the character motivations. So it was a good series. And it is one that now that the final issue is out and read, probably in a couple weeks I'll go back and just read the whole thing on a Sunday afternoon and just take it all in at once. But it was good. It was entertaining. It was worth buying. And definitely if anyone's a fan of things like The Wire or The Unit or 24 or anything like that, this is definitely a series that you'd want to pick up.
Cool.
And that's going to do it for me.
Has everyone gone through their rapid fire?
Yeah.
All right. Did anyone speak about, I just have two, either Daredevil number 11 or Doctor Strange number 11?
We talked about Doctor Strange.
Okay, just very quickly on Doctor Strange, I like the cool Kevin Nolan fill-in art. And the sliding timeline about in the Marvel Universe entering the Doctor Strange corner.
That's exactly what Roddy said.
You know, that was weird because it was jarring. Wasn't it jarring, Roddy?
Yeah.
Like, because it's on the first page or the second page of the book. So when you see it and you're just like, whoa, when did this, you know, when did this like kind of become part of the Doctor Strange canon? That's what kind of took me, knocked me for a loop a little bit. But the rest of the book was a good read. Daredevil number 11. It's funny because Daredevil has kind of been hit and miss for me, but the latest arc called, I have the physical copy from me, Dark Art, right? This is actually part two of this storyline. And, I don't remember exactly what happened in part one in issue number 10. I don't remember much of it at all, but it's not necessary to have actually read it. You could actually pick up this issue and understand exactly what's going on. And I think Charles Soule is finally starting to hit on all cylinders on this because, you know, this is, you know, like a really, you know, this feels like a really good Daredevil story arc as opposed to some of the previous stuff, which was kind of hit and miss for various reasons, you know, especially with Creepy Ten Finger, you know, with Creeper Finger Guy. This was, you know, I definitely recommend Dirt. I know you were kind of reading some of the Daredevil stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, did you read issue 10?
I can't remember. I haven't read 11 yet. I know that. I can't remember if I read 10 or not because nothing is jogging my memory.
Right. Ultimately, I don't want to spoil anything. I really don't want to get into it because I'm actually recommending this. This is surprisingly a potential click of the week because I had a good time catching up with what the story is all about. Honestly, if you read 11 and don't read 10, you could probably get away with that. But it's probably, I started to flip through 10 a few, you know, when I had a couple extra minutes on my way home today, but I don't even think it's necessary. I think you could just read this issue 11, get caught up to speed, and just read a very good in-depth Matt Murdock and Daredevil story and a crime story to boot.
Hmm. Wait, does he get all lawyery in this one?
Not really.
Okay, because I was going to say, because
it's more, it's
if he does, I know you're going to be all over it.
No. You know what it is? It's not courtroom stuff.
Okay,
it is lawyery stuff in the sense that it's, you know, kind of operating an investigation from the DA's perspective. You know, but there's definitely, you know, it's a little bit more law and ordery procedural stuff, but there's definitely just a really great couple of pages of dialogue in here where, you know, there's really a lot of exploration of Murdoch's status quo right now as, you know, like with the genie being put back in the bottle on his secret identity and his current job as an assistant DA at the Manhattan DA's office.
All right.
So give it a shot. Clicks of the week time.
Clicks of the week time.
All right, well, Sheriff of Babylon. There, done. Easy. What you guys got?
How many more issues in that, by the way? There are two?
I believe it's 12. Okay. I'm hoping that there's something else that comes after this, mm-hmm. even if it's the same two guys, but they're doing a completely different story, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I believe it's a 12 issue.
Okay. So I have a little bit of time to catch up still.
I have Superman number 6.
Okay.
Woo.
Nice.
No applause on that one? Come on.
All right, fine. Jeez. Roddy, what do you got?
Shoot. I think I might go with Moonlight was pretty damn good this week.
Wow.
But I think I might actually go with All New, All Different Avengers.
No kidding. Feeling. Yeah. honestly,
well, and only I'm saying about that because I am curious because there was something that was said in that book that kind of makes me think like, well, she's going to be real. She's going to have a real time when Hank finally shows back up.
Yeah.
Or should that actually happen? So
I think so too. I agree with that. That's going to be a heck of a, I would call it a confrontation.
A reunion. Yeah. Or whatever.
I am torn between, believe it or not, Spidey 10, Daredevil number 11, and sort of the Doctor Strange, but maybe less so. I think I'm going to choose, surprise, surprise, Spidey number 10.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Very cool. Cool. Time for an ad read. All right. Help us keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, or apparel. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon.com through CSPN.us. Do it today.
Now for the cinematic news of the week. Sci-fi Superman prequel Krypton casts its Zod Lee female lead.
Okay.
And Deadline reports that King Arthur star Campbell, or Georgina Campbell, will portray Lita Zod, described as a member of Krypton's military caste and the daughter of a general, Allura Zod.
Kneel before Zod.
Mm. I'm assuming that's a comic book character.
Who's Zod?
Not familiar. Or Lita.
Wasn't she? Lita? Yeah, she was from the WWE. What are you talking about?
She's a Hall of Famer.
I think they might have made her for this one. I'm not sure, though.
Okay. Star Trek Discovery's main character is confirmed.
So, yes, this basically goes back to the original series. I think this is supposed to be someone based off of Minjell Barrett's character in the original plot of that series, which, well, I guess we'll get to it later, but happy 50th anniversary, Star Trek.
And we find out what the season finale title is for Luke Cage, which debuts at the end of the month.
Yep.
That is excited amazing. For that. It's amazing that it's already coming at the end of this month. Unbelievable.
And I will say again, there was a playlist that I will tweet out in a little bit that I made for that.
Cool.
I may be binge watching that whenever we finish recording that Thursday night, and then it comes out Friday night at midnight.
Doesn't usually show come up around 3 here for us?
Does it come out what?
Right, it usually comes up around 3-ish, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I'm usually asleep when the stuff comes out. Yeah. If so, then I won't be staying up to watch it. What else do we have? Deadpool writers were on set because Ryan Reynolds paid them when Fox wouldn't. So when it was time to shoot Deadpool, 20th Century Fox wouldn't pay writers Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick to be on set. In an interview on AMC's Geeking Out via comicbook.com, Reese and Wernick revealed that they were on set because of Reynolds' generosity. Okay. I'm sure there must have been a reason why Fox wouldn't pay him.
You know, it's all that two guys, a girl, and a pizza place royalty money.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, it's not usual for the writer to be on. I don't know because I don't know anything about that. But I felt like it's probably not usual for a writer to be on there unless they're like have another role, like producer or something. I don't know though, and that could be why that happened.
Ghost Rider stars in new found footage from the next season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I like that they're being comic accurate with the jacket.
It looks weird
in real life.
And yeah,
some stuff does.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I like that. It's authentic looking though. You know, like it's faithful. I like that.
James Gunn has a special group version of the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 script.
And none of you can see it.
Black Panther movie will be grittier than most Marvel films, says the star, Chadwick Boseman. The Flash Season 3 Mirror Master will be missing something. That something will be his infamous gun.
Okay.
What?
So the funny thing about this is I remember seeing a character that was like this in seasons past, but it wasn't him. It was a different character that was a slightly similar power set. But yeah, he's basically going to be a meta and he won't have the gun. So he won't, well, he's a meta, so he won't need the gun, basically, is what they're kind of going for.
Yeah. He doesn't use the mirror gun. He's a true meta, but he's not necessarily warping into other dimensions. Let's see. Apparently Shia LaBeouf was almost in Suicide Squad.
Hey, at least DC movies did something right for a change, right? I mean,
Jim was
Scott, on that one.
Scott Eastman, he was his character. Because that's original.
Isn't that Rick Flag? Thinking?
Funny.
Or maybe not? I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Whatever. The Flash's Greg Berlanti pitched Marvel an Iron Man movie in 2005. Luke Cage clip pits him against some small-time crooks. Mon-El will be friend and foe on Supergirl Season 2.
Oh, cool.
Who is Mon-El?
He's a Daxamite, which is a race somewhat similar to the Kryptonians. They have similar powers. And he was...
He's the Legion guy that looks like he's wearing like a red military uniform with a cape.
Yeah, kind of. And he was poisoned by lead. And so they put him into the Phantom Zone in order to keep him from dying. And then he was from like the Superman era. And then he was in the Phantom Zone all the way until Legion of Superheroes. And then they found a way to cure him, and they brought him out of the Phantom Zone, cured him, and then he was running around in the future.
Oh, cool.
Cool.
DC confirms Joe Manganiello as Deathstroke in Ben Affleck's Batman movie. Remember in Batman, the movie director Leslie Martinson, who passed away at 101 years old?
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Greg Berlanti's Black Lightning project is going to FOTS.
Cool.
Hopefully, I'll actually care about it.
Oh, no.
Hopefully, it actually lasts.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Gotham's lasted, and so far Lucifer is.
Yeah, but Fox's track record with certain stuff is not great, so.
Look, can we move beyond Mantis? You can't keep bringing it up, all right?
No, damn it, because that was a good show.
I can't move past Fastlane being canceled. That was a good show.
Which one?
Oh, no.
Fastlane.
Oh, come on.
Star Trek 50th anniversary video released by Paramount.
Again.
And that's it for movie news. Mm-hmm. Now to the comic book news, the good stuff. A new team of Hasbro characters unite to form Revolutionaries over at IDW.
No visionaries involved.
So after the Revolution event, teaming up a bunch of Hasbro properties over at IDW, there will be a new ongoing series that will keep some of the characters together as a team, and they'll be able to bring extra characters in and out as they need. So these franchises involved are Transformers, G.I. Joe, ROM, Micronauts, Action Man, and Mask, Mobile Armored Strike Command. Can I just say I've never heard of Action Man before until like this month or last month?
So Action Man is kind of a G.I. Joe, British G.I. Joe spinoff, right?
Yeah, because Action Man led to Action Force, and Action Force slowly morphed into the G.I. Joe comics over there. And then some of the stuff that happened in the Action Force British G.I. Joe comics came over and repollinated into the American version of G.I. Joe. So it's kind of a weird relationship with those.
Weirdest there, there was like two animated versions of Action Man. Only one of them I remember because it was a CG version in like the 2000s.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, it kind of made him into like an X Games star, but he was also still a secret agent and still fighting the same enemies of, you know, who I can't remember the name of right now. But.
If I remember, a lot of his toys were the bigger, like 12-inch figures, which looked more like dolls, so nobody wanted to play with them, and that's why he kind of fumbled away.
So the main cast of characters would be Action Man, Black Rock, who is a Transformer, Mayday from G.I. Joe, and Cup, another Transformer. The Revolution event begins next week, September 14th, and then Revolutionaries comes out in December.
Are they going to be stationed at the Mask Mountain?
Oh, no.
Actually, I think we have a review copy of Revolution 1 already in the folder, so get reading.
Yeah.
Can't read Doom Patrol, but maybe you'll read the Revolution.
Oh, no.
I can read Doom in enough time to write a review of it, if I feel like it. The 2016 Harvey Award winners were announced last weekend. Congrats to all those winners.
Yay.
Speaking of going back... Okay. Yes, applaud. Mm-hmm. Applaud. Applaud. So going back to Star Trek Discovery, there will be new books and comics coming out at the same time as the show.
Okay.
Comics from IDW and books from Simon and Schuster. Canada's getting its own superhero universe. I'm actually kind of interested in this news.
Doesn't Canada already have its own superhero universe?
Alpha Flight.
Like, well, no, they've got Captain Canuck.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, yeah. That's Captain Canuck will be a part of this.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And a couple other people.
I was going to say, if someone's trying to upstage Captain Canuck, we're going to have a fight here. That's
them's fighting words.
Hey.
Oh, hey. Oh, goodness.
So there'll be a bunch of new series. A bunch of new series as part of a single universe. So Chapter House has already been doing pretty well with the revival of all-Canadian hero Captain Canuck. And he's set to do a crossover with Pitiful Human Lizard, Phantoma, the public domain superheroine and first credit female comic book character with superpowers is going to be added to the series. And then they're going to do a spinoff called Agents of Pat about an all-woman super team featuring Redcoat in Quebec. And then they bring back Freelance, the classic Canadian superhero who emerged on the scene after the World War II ban on non-essential American goods, including comic books. All right, let's see. Does Deadpool and the Mercs for Money signal the return of Next Wave Agents of Hate?
Certainly seems like it.
So I had to put that in there because as a fan of Next Wave, I couldn't not put that in there. Yeah, because we see Monica Rambeau's back. Apparently a Machine Man's on the Agents of Merc, whatever, the Mercs for Money, whatever. And yeah, and we had the Captain also appear in, was it Onto All Different Avengers or was it Nova book? Can't remember. Either way, that was half the team right there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, was there a pitch for one? A redo of Netflix, according to this article, or just wishing, I guess.
Matt Wayne 97 asks, Dirt, why does he hate Mantis? On Twitter.
No, it's not that I hate Mantis. I loved Mantis. I watch Mantis every week. It's just that you have to move beyond things at a certain point. Like, I've moved beyond Mantis. I'm still in mourning for the Cavemen TV show. But then, once I get Cavemen out of my system, then maybe I can move on to Outsourced or some other canceled TV show, that I long for in order to fill that void. That's like all that is.
Goodness. Moving on.
So Nyla Magruder may be the first African-American woman to write for Marvel.
Right. So basically, we already know that there's another Black Panther book being written by Roxane Gay, and she was the one being credited as the first Black female writer at Marvel. But actually, this month, there is a Infinite comic. As a matter of fact, I think we talked about it before, the one with Tippy Toe and Rocket Raccoon, which is being written by Nyla Magruder. So she is technically the first one.
And since that's on Marvel Unlimited, I need to give that a read.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talked about the new Supergirl Being Super miniseries that's going to explore her origins. And that's it for the week.
All right. Well, then before we wrap up, speaking of Matt Wang, I just want to throw a shout out to Matt Wang. I got a care package from him. I was going to talk about it last week, but I wasn't on. Mm-hmm. Roddy, I got a bunch of those Huntick cards from him. So if you want some more... let me know, but
I need to open those. Yeah, shout out to Matt Wayne from
But he threw in some comic stuff, which was neat: a Zenoscope, Jurassic Strike Force, and one of the Kickstarter backer kits for the book May when that went on Kickstarter. But the awesome bizarre random thing that he sent me is a copy of the Walking Dead board game in French. And now I've never had so much fun playing a game because I don't speak French.
So you're just making up your own rules.
I'm working as best I can to make this game make sense. But besides it being filled with some awesome Charlie Adlard artwork, it also comes with a game board. and this game board is a map of Atlanta. And this is an in-canon map of the Walking Dead world. So you get to see where the different neighborhoods are, where the prison is, where the campsite was, all of that in relation to the city of Atlanta. So, I mean, this right here, for no other reason, you know, buy the game and just get the game board so you can have this map so you can see the relation of all the locations in the comic to each other. This is from back when there were actually zombies in the comic and it was good. now, I heard zombies actually made a return this week in Walking Dead, so I may take a look at it to see if that's true. But yeah, this right here, this alone is worth – you buy it in French or Spanish or Swahili or whatever. But definitely just to get that game board map, that is fantastic.
Nice.
That's cool.
And I also want to send a quick.
I think we all got care packages because I think Matt needed to get rid of this stuff.
Did everybody get hunting cards?
Yeah.
I think I just. Well, yeah, I don't know. I got
mine still on my couch over there outside.
What were they, hunting cards? Is that like a trading game or something?
Yeah,
it is. And I also got some other cards, just like Magic the Gathering cards, but they look like they might be for a different game. I need to crack those open.
Is that what these are, hunting? I don't know. I barely looked at them. I was like, oh, they're trading cards. Nice.
Yeah.
I got some autographed trades. I got the autograph trade for Two Sisters by Matt Kint, autographed by Matt Kint. I got an autograph trade of Bad Karma, autographed by, I don't want to misspeak, I know it's one of the writers, one of the contributors to this. It's B. Clay Moore. And the pick of the litter, the jewel that I got, believe it or not, was a piece of original art. And it's a sketch by Art Adams from back in the day. It's literally done in ballpoint pen. It's an Art Adams. It's got a, whatchamacallit, it's got a certificate of authenticity and everything. It's from X-Men Annual number 10. It's a sketch of it's basically a layout sketch of Spiral, and you can see Mojo there as well. So I think I'm going to endeavor to try to bring this to New York Comic Con and have Art Adams sign off on this. And autograph actually, that.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot. I got a piece of artwork in the mail this week too. This is from Mike Miller, and Mike Miller is the artist on Injustice. He's one of the guys on that, which Injustice was the highest selling digital comic on Amazon.
Right.
He also did a lot of, I believe, covers for the Game of Thrones series from Dynamite.
Okay.
But he drew me this.
Wow.
Tron. And really nice, intricate line work from him. Really great piece. He slid it into one of these hard shells and then put it in a stiff envelope with this piece of foam core. I'm wondering, what the heck did he cut out of this piece of foam core?
Yeah, what was that protecting earlier, right?
Like what shape? Was he mailing a dead rat? That's like a good shape for Squash Rat or something. But yeah, I love that piece of artwork. Beautiful.
That's cool. So is that a commission you've been waiting a long time for?
Yeah, well, actually, I asked for it at C2E2.
Oh, it's not long ago.
And he was going to give it to me on Sunday, and I didn't stay for Sunday, and I forgot all about it. So he did it like the mm-hmm. Saturday of C2E2, and I never saw him again. So he's had it just like sitting in his stuff for months. Mm-hmm. And so he and I talk on Facebook, and I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, there was that Tron drawing. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'll send it to you. So I finally got it. So now I got to get a big frame and everything, but fantastic piece of artwork.
Excellent work. Sweet. What's funny is that at MattWang97 told me that he got me something cool from the Marvel booth, and that's what I was looking forward to. Honestly, it was my train of thought. The guy that does the
Lou Ferrigno.
No,
Stanley.
No, the alternate covers, the Kitty alternate covers Scotty Young. Yes, a Scotty Young Winter Soldier and Cap pins. So
nice.
that's what I thought I was getting, and I got so much more. So thanks again. Shout out to at MattWang97.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Next up, while we're at that phase, I'll just go ahead and quickly do mine. So I got this called box 13th, I guess, from Red 5 Comics that Matt got me. And they're both signed. Well, this one's signed, and this other graphic novel called Chinatown, which I'm kind of curious looking into. And, of course...
the pièce de résistance.
My awesome Black Panther hoodie, which I'm still waiting for him to send me an invoice on. So thank you. I'm wear it on the show when it gets colder because it's still kind of hot around here and
yeah.
Trying to feel all of that. And yeah, I got this Doctor Strange pin.
Nice!
Another pin here with it, and a bunch of those hunted cards.
Yep. We all got those cards. We're going to have to play online or something.
Yeah, I know, right? And then I got these cards, which it's not Magic the Gathering. It's something else, I guess.
We're going to have to crack them open to find out.
Yeah.
Is it Legend of the Five Rings or something?
No.
Dark Portal? Yeah. I've not heard of those two.
Dang if I know.
But anyway.
Cool.
I want to send one quick shout out to not Matt Wang, though. I do appreciate the care packages over the last couple months. But we've had a YouTube commenter who's commented on stuff here and there over the summer. And because YouTube is stupid, it's been difficult for me to go and comment to reply to the comments because it wants me to like create a profile and give it like use my real name on YouTube and all this stuff that I refuse to do. But I want to shout out Gene Paul Ace Peter is the username. Hopefully he's still watching. We appreciate the comments and you watching. Hit us up on Twitter if you have a Twitter. Hit us up on there if you're watching the show. Hit us up at CBCron if you want to join in on the discussion.
Absolutely. You're more than welcome.
They changed that YouTube stuff, so you don't necessarily have to do your real name anymore because I just had to go through that mess recently when I was doing that
last week. I kept trying to go and do it over the summer, but it kept you must do this, and I was like, no, I don't want to right now.
hey, good on him for watching the video feed.
Yes.
Totally.
Naturally, there should be some way, I guess we could open up the comments so we can see stuff, but then we get a lot of bots and trolls, so who knows. But if you're ever watching on the website, you can go to declicknation.com/live to watch each week's show.
Let me get an ad read in before we wrap. So this episode of the Click Nation's Combo Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and much more, they're all on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcasts Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner, and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Okay, so apparently Matt Wang just told me that these are WoW cards, and I've never played WoW, but I do play Hearthstone here and there, which is the card game based off of WoW, I guess. I didn't know that. Okay, I thought the only real cards they had were bootleg Chinese ones.
Oh no!
No, because there was an actual bootleg of Hearthstone that Chinese made that Blizzard's been trying to kill.
Wow! Okay. I had no idea. That's cool.
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Like a burrito.
Oh, gosh.
What is that? Put the focus on that one more time. Interesting.
It's a bat and a piece of cardboard.
Is that what you think a burrito is? Because I think there need to be some discussions in your house on who's doing the cooking.
Oh. Things have taken a turn for the surreal on the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
All right, enough of that.
Follow Dirt at PCN_Dirt and at PopCultureNetwork.com. And go to PopCultureNet.com. Did I just say that?
No, it's at PopCultureNet and it's PopCultureNetwork.com.
Thanks for the assist. And Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram. And we'll be back next week for another exciting episode of Comic Chronicles. And we are signing off.
Good evening. Hey!